ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So first of all, we'd like to welcome all the devotees, all the guests who have come for this every week Sunday festival program, where we gather all together to talk about Supreme Lord, to talk about the process of bhakti, devotional service. So today also happens to be a very, very auspicious and special day. So we will briefly discuss on that subject matter briefly, and then we will speak something about the different aspects of devotional service which we learn from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Today is the appearance, or we call it as the advent of Sri Bhagavad Gita. So today is the day when around 5,000 years back, Krishna spoke the message of Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, which we all read, which we have, as we see, is Bhagavad Gita as it is by Srila Prabhupada. So this message, as we say, this descended. It advented. It was not that this knowledge was not existing before 5,000 years ago. This knowledge was prevalent in the form of the different ways this was preserved. This jnana was prevalent. But as Krishna himself explained in the Bhagavad Gita in the 4th chapter, that yoga nashta parantapa, that with passage of time, this knowledge gets lost over a period of time. So time and again, the Supreme Lord himself comes, or through his representatives, revives or rediscover or reinvent or reappear or represent this knowledge for all of us to practice, for all of us to understand, to talk about, to discuss and apply these teachings in our life. So this, in that sense, the Bhagavad Gita, or as we call it, the song of God, is actually a book of compassion and love. It is Krishna's, or God's, compassion. For that matter, all the scriptures, the Vedic literatures, or for that matter, any holy book of any religion, they are these books, are books of compassion. It is the Lord's compassion for all the living entities, for each one of us. These books are written for each one of us. It's the Lord's desire. It is his great, great compassion when he sees each one of us suffering in this material world, rotting in this material world. He sends these knowledge, this jnana, these scriptures, so that we can take shelter, take help of these or books or this knowledge, and we can climb up to his or our own eternal abode, the Goloka Vrindavan, or Krishna's eternal abode, or the Vaikuntha planets. So that is the whole idea. These, the Bhagavad Gita or any literature, the Vedic literatures or any scriptures for that matter, these are the books of compassion and love. Krishna or God, he loves each one of us. He wants us to see back to his own abode, where is our eternal residence is, where our eternal residence is. So these books of knowledge, these books of wisdom, they give us an understanding of who we are, why we are here, and how we can go back to the place from where we have come here, to back to our place of eternal residence, where we can be actually eternally happy, blissful, satisfied. Because each one of us is Sat Chid Anand, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. But unfortunately, being placed in the material world, we experience asat, temporariness, niranand, unhappiness. Each one of us can see for ourselves. We don't have to point out, but everyone, each one of us, we experience unhappiness in our lives. We experience temporary nature of this world. We have something now, we lose it over a period of time. We have some relations which are broken, either by time, passage of time, or space, or ultimate reality as death. So that means we experience the asat feature in this material world. So sat, chit, anand. And ignorance, which is all pervading. We don't know who we are, what is the purpose. So these sins, constitutionally, we are such chit and anand. So therefore, when we read these scriptures, they come to show us that who we are. They are like the mirror, that they show us that this is who we are. And this is where your eternal home is. This is how you can go back to that place, that abode where the Lord is waiting. So in that sense, these books are God's love and compassion in the form of this knowledge. So that is what the Song of God or Bhagavad Gita is. So therefore it is very, very important to take shelter. So these types of days, the advent of the Gita, is a day where we can reinforce our commitments and our desire to actually understand what these scriptures are here to teach us. That is the way we can reciprocate with the love of the God. So that is what the Srimad Bhagavad Gita is, that knowledge is very, very important and relevant. And as we know, this is, as we discussed, this is beyond the purview of time. That's why we say the advent of the Bhagavad Gita. We don't say that this was written down on this date or edited on this date or reprinted or whatever we have about any other book. This book, which is not an ordinary book, this is beyond any mundane literatures. These have the power to take one back home, back to Godhead, to the highest destination. I remember one time one of our book distributors, he was distributing in the local train a small book, maybe one of the small books which we have, Srila Prabhupada's small books, based on the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. And he was like making an announcement in the train that this book can take you back home, back to Godhead. So another person was there, okay, just this small, simple knowledge, small book written, how can this take us so far away to the spiritual abode? So then this very devotee very intelligently answered that if you have to go to a Bombay, you get a small ticket. Or from Bombay to Delhi, you just get a small ticket. So this ticket has the capacity or gives you the facility or gives the direction for you to take you to Bombay or to Delhi. So that's by buying that ticket and of course following the process, one goes back to or one reaches to Delhi. Similarly, this knowledge, it has immense potential. This is transcendental sound. This is a material example just to show a comparison. But these books are beyond the purview of any human intellect or time. We have seen in the lives of so many people all over the world, there are like volumes of books written on glories of book distribution and how people's lives have been transformed by just reading one of Srila Prabhupada's books. Somebody got a book in Siberia, started practicing Krishna consciousness, chanting 16 rounds. There are many, many stories like these, volumes have been written, and we can endlessly go on speaking about that. Of course, that's not what the focus we are doing today is. So that means these books have the potential to transfer us or reinstate us to our eternal nature. That is what the essence or the purpose of this knowledge which Krishna has given. And it is very, very relevant in each one of our lives. Many times, many of the people outside, when you go out to distribute Bhagavad Gita or different books, they ask, hey, how is Gita relevant in our life? It was spoken to someone, Arjuna, 5,000 years back on a battlefield, which is apparently, if we see, it is nothing to do with, now we don't have a battlefield situation nor those things which were there that time. The traditions have changed, the times have changed, the technologies have changed. So many things have changed. How is it that the Gita is still relevant? Many times people ask this question. But we actually analyze Arjuna's situation, we will see each one of us can very perfectly fit in there. Arjuna, if you see the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he was, as soon as he saw the armies on the both sides, he is completely confused. And he says, I am ready to give up my Gandiva bow and I am not going to fight. He tells to Krishna that I am completely confused. I am in great depression. If any doctors here can say that all the symptoms which Arjuna is experiencing, trembling and drying of the mouth and perspiration, and all those are the classical symptoms of symptoms of depression. So Arjuna was put into that state of depression where he was confused. He is there on the battlefield. He is there right on the job, and there he is confused. What should I do? Should I fight? Or should I just give up my bow? He was ready to give up his duty. That was Arjuna's situation. I'm sure each one of us in our lives at time experience these types of symptoms. We get experience confusion. We are in a threshold where we are unable to decide, should I move, take a left turn, or should I take a right turn? Should I do this job, or should I leave this job? Or should I, whatever, different situations. For each one of us, there are different situations Krishna puts in where we have to take a decision whether to move ahead or to go behind, like Arjuna. And of course, Arjuna was not an ordinary person. We may think that, okay, Arjuna was not qualified. I am educated. I have a B.Tech degree. I have so much wealth. I have so much knowledge. I have my relatives. I have my friends. I have my wealth. So many things to protect me, to help me, to guide me. Arjuna was also not an ordinary person. If we compare, he was absolutely extraordinary. He was one of the best students of Dronacharya, one of the best schools of technology. Dronacharya was personally employed there in the kingdom to teach this Dhanur Shastra and other different military sciences and different faculties he was teaching. It's one of the most reputed college at that time was Dronacharya's institute. And Arjuna was the topper. He was the best student of that institute. And he is there, all that qualifications to fight. It was not that he was a coward. He had previously fought with the demigods, Indra, Lord Shiva, and had pleased them and had acquired special powers from them. So this is the personality we are talking about. But here he was, midst of the battlefield, in the most crucial time, ready to fight, but then he is losing his self-confidence. He doesn't have the confidence to lift his even bow. He has said, I cannot lift this Gandhi. He keeps it aside. So at times, situation comes in our life and also we have all the academic facility, all the wealth, all the advice from our relatives, or so many people, but still that confusion state comes. Now what? So Arjuna was in a similar situation. So that in that sense, and when Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, we see how beautifully the end Arjuna says, Nashta moho, all my illusion is destroyed and my memory has been revived and I am now ready to execute my duty. So that is what the message of the Bhagavad Gita is, to give us the vision of the situation and how to act upon that situation. That is what the scriptures are all about. They are, as we say, Shastra Chakshu. They give us a vision. Like for a doctor, if a layman sees an X-ray, he cannot see much, some bone structures or something like that, but he cannot analyze it or he cannot understand or to make what sense of it. But Bhagavad Gita or the scriptures are like the medical knowledge. The person who has gone through that radiology course, he can see the X-ray and understand, this is what it means. Here there is a hairline fracture, or here there is this fracture, and how to go about it. Similarly, when we have this knowledge of these scriptures, the Bhagavad Gita and other Vedic literature, they give us the vision. Okay, so this is the situation I am put in my life. This is where Arjuna was in a similar situation, and this is how Krishna guided him, and this is how he responded to that situation. So that is what the message of Bhagavad Gita or the scriptures is, to open our eyes to see the reality as it is from the eyes of the manufacturer. As we always hear this example, that a manufacturer knows how to use the product best, how to, it gives a guarantee period, or how to use it, how to clean it, how to maintain it, and how to engage, or whatever is the best maintenance possible. Similarly, Krishna or God, who is the creator of all the living entities, creator of this material world and the spiritual worlds, when he comes, or when he sends us here, as we discussed earlier, out of compassion, he gives these manuals also to us. That this is what, how you should lead your life. How you can come back home. So that is what these Bhagavad Gita is, the manual of life. So therefore, this is very, very important for us to really, really meditate upon and understand these instructions which are there in these books. They are the law books, as Govind Prabhu was very beautifully explaining in the morning, the Bhagavad Gita session, from different chapters, what different lessons we can derive from each and every verse of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, if we have the right attitude in approaching it. That is what this wisdom of Bhagavad Gita is. Any way we come in touch with this knowledge is going to purify us. This is coming from Krishna's own lotus mouth. As we were reading this morning from the Gita Mahatmya of different verses, the mother Ganges, she is coming from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Sri Vishnu, Sri Krishna. It's so purifying. Similarly, this Bhagavad Gita is emanating from the lotus-like mouth of the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. It's extremely purifying. Just by any touch of Krishna, one gets immediately purified. That is the nature of the touch, of Krishna's touch, like a Chintamani stone. Any iron piece comes to it, it gets converted into gold. The iron may come from a butcher's shop, that butcher's knife, or from a deity room, or from a very sacred place of like temple. That Chintamani stone does not discriminate. Similarly, the God or Krishna or his words, anyone who comes in touch of these bona fide instructions which are there in these wonderful scriptures spoken by the Lord himself has to get purified. Immediately get, that is the nature of the Supreme Lord, that anyone who comes in touch with the Supreme Lord gets immensely purified. That is the purifying potency. Every process or everyone or everything has its nature, and it is the nature of the Supreme Lord to purify, to get anyone who comes in touch in any ways, as the Isha Upanishad gives the example of a sun or Krishna as compared to sun. A sun is purifying. It comes in so many contaminations in the world. So many things, the stool and urine and so many things are there. But by the power of the sun, the whole place gets purified. But sun remains unaffected. So anyone in touch with Krishna's words, Krishna's vani, gets immediately purified. It acquires, it's a basic principle, as we know, that the scriptures gives this example, like that Swati Nakshatra, when sometimes it rains in the Swati Nakshatra, that drop of water, depending on where it falls, it gets transformed. When that drop of water falls on a lotus flower, it shines so beautifully. It like appears like a pearl. But the same drop of water when falls on an oyster in the ocean, it assumes, it becomes a beautiful pearl in period of time. And the same water droplet when fallen on a hot iron rod acquires that quality and it immediately evaporated. So similarly, when anyone who comes in touch with Krishna, the supreme pure, has to get immediately purified, as the scriptures explain very beautifully through many, many examples and through many, many verses, how the touch of the Supreme Lord's words, the touch of Supreme Lord's Archa Vigraha, his katha, the touch of his devotees, or any form, the touch of his holy dham, any touch with Krishna in any of the forms, any of the ways, by anyone, gets immensely and immediately purified. Just to illustrate this beautiful point, we will just discuss one of the episodes from Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto, and see, of course, today being Gita Jayanti, we will see how this episode also, the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is in an elaboration of the Bhagavad Gita, we will see how this episode, which we are going to discuss, the deliverance of Putana, we will just now discuss that, focus on that, and we will see how, from the Bhagavad Gita, how these messages of the Gita are so beautifully elaborated in different pastimes in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic literatures. They elaborate. Bhagavad Gita is like a sutra form. So these scriptures, the Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic literatures, they elaborate the the points or the concepts which are being mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. So therefore today, we will just discuss one of the beautiful pastimes of Krishna, which he performs, and see how different verses of the Bhagavad Gita, the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, is being revealed through these wonderful pastimes. So this episode of deliverance of Putana happened when Krishna was very, very young. He was born a very, very small, beautiful child, just a few days old, in Gokul Mahavan at the house of Nanda and Yashoda. Krishna is there, born. Everyone is so happy, celebrating the beautiful festival of Krishna being born in Nanda Maharaj's place after many, many years. And everyone is so happy and jubilant, and a beautiful festival of is celebrated in Sri Nanda Bhavan. And immediately after that, Nanda Maharaj had to go to Mathura to pay his annual taxes to our Kamsa. He was the king that time and demanding annual taxes. So they had to go. So Nanda Maharaj with few of the cowherd men boarded the chariots with all their milk products and yogurt and ghee and other gifts to offer to the king then. So meanwhile, behind what is happening in Gokul Mahavan, in Nanda Bhavan, that is what Shukadev Goswami is explaining. And of course, Nanda Maharaj is on his way back. He meets Vasudev after paying his taxes to Kams. He meets Vasudev there, and Vasudev gives him a warning that you are going there, beware, go immediately. There might be some danger awaiting in Gokul for your son. Of course, Vasudev, being a diplomat, he was knowing, and he had his spies who were overhearing Kamsa's plans. So he knew that Kamsa could do some nefarious activities or some destruction in Mahavan. So he gave this warning. And Nanda Maharaj, remembering Krishna, remembering Lord Vishnu, Narayan, he is going towards. That is the scene. And then there, Shukadeva Goswami mentions that Putana, Kamsa sent Putana, who was like a Khechari demon, who could fly, who was drinking, that was her food, was drinking the blood and flesh of small babies. That was Putana's job profile. And she's there sent by Kams. So she is wandering through this the villages of Brajabhumi. Of course, as the Shukadeva Goswami is describing this pastime to Parikshit Maharaj, who is very, very raptly hearing this episode, he becomes a little afraid or careful that how is it that just a small boy, Krishna, of course, Parikshit Maharaj knew that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, nobody can harm him, but that is the nature of love, that he could see, oh, Putana is going to come, maybe she may harm. Shukadeva Goswami, understanding the mood of Parikshit, that is the beauty of Srimad Bhagavatam, very beautiful dialogue. Similarly, Bhagavad Gita also, a very, very emotional dialogue of love. That is what the Bhagavad Gita is, as some devotees put it. Emotional dialogue of love between Krishna and Arjuna. So herein, also Shukadeva Goswami, seeing the mood of Parikshit Maharaj, he immediately says, my dear king, wherever people in any position perform their occupational duties of devotional service, of chanting and hearing, no kurvanti satvatam bhru, that nayatra shravana adini Shukadeva Goswami, that wherever there is hearing and chanting of the names of God is going on, there cannot be effect of any evil influence. So there is no possibility that any evil influence, where there is chanting of the names of God is happening, what to speak of when the God himself is present over there. So that is the presence of the Supreme Lord. That is what the first chapter, in the first few verses of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna, the Gita is describing about the different symptoms or different the signs of victory, that Krishna is blowing his Panchajanya shell, and it's Krishna being referred as Madhava and then Rishikesha by different nomenclatures. Krishna is being addressed in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, arousing that faith that wherever Madhav, Madhava is the husband of the goddess of fortune, is there. Wherever Dharmakshetra, the first verse of the Bhagavad Gita, as Govinda Prabhu beautifully explained, Dharmakshetra itself implies that the victory of Dharma is going to take place. Wherever there is Krishna or his holy names, there cannot be any harm. That is what the first few verses in the Bhagavad Gita are also pointing out. That these are the different symptoms. This is what is are there. The presence of the conch shell, the beautiful presence of the Supreme Lord himself, who is Madhav, who is Rishikesh. How can be there any misery or trouble? In the same mode, Shukadev Goswami, herein he is saying that wherever there is chanting of the names of God is there, my dear Parikshit, how is it possible any evil influence could take place? So how is that this Putana could do any harm in this place? So then Shukadev Goswami again comes back to the narration that once upon a time, Putana, who would move according to her own desire, Yadrichaya, she is moving and wandering from one place to another, killing different children, killing, troubling, trying to enjoy this world. So that is the nature of this world. Each one of us are like that, trying to enjoy, wandering through different places. As Shukadeva Goswami, he is saying that she would move according to by her own desire. So by our own desire, similarly, we are just moving around from one place to another, trying to enjoy. Maybe this place will give me happiness. This thing will give me happiness. This thing will give me happiness. If I get this, I will be happy. If I get that, I will be happy. Maybe when I grow old, when now I am in the school, when I go to the college, I will be happy. If I go to the get a good college, I'll be happy. If I get a good degree, I'll get a good job. Probably then I will be happy. As the Gita explained that the soul is moving from one place to another. Dehinosmin yatha dehi komaram yovanam jara. From birth to childhood to youth to old age. Dehinosmin yatha dehi komaram yovanam jara. Tatha dehantar prapti. Like that he's moving. Trying to enjoy this world, thinking this will give me happiness. Maybe this. Just a few days back in the Bhagavatam class, we were giving one example. That it's like this, the material world appears so attractive. If somebody has offered you a nice, beautiful, made cake, very nicely decorated, icing is done very nicely, but instead of the icing sugar, the person has put salt in it. How will it taste? It looks so beautiful, very beautiful floral designs are there and different colors of icing, sugar has been used and done. So beautiful, attractive to look at. But then you bite it, you're given one piece. Okay, here, this is for you, Prabhu. Nice, wonderful cake. You accept that cake and bite. And then, oof, such disgust is there. But then it looks so attractive. Maybe on the other side, it might be good. Because it looks so good. Maybe I'll try it on the other side. Maybe this side, that side. Prabhupada explained in that purport which we were discussing the other day in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is like a mirage. When we see the water in the mirage, it looks, oh wow, such water, cooling water is there. I'm thirsty in this hot desert. Let me just go and run and drink that cool water. But when we go run, to grab, what we get is hot sand to grab. Prabhupada in that beautiful purport explained that this does not deny the existence of water. Water exists, but this does not exist here. It is in a place which we have left, the spiritual abode. There is where their real happiness is. The water is there. The mirage does not deny the existence of water. That is what Srila Prabhupada explains in that purport which we were discussing. That there is happiness, but it's not in this world, as Krishna explains in this Bhagavad Gita also. Dukh alay ashashvatam. He is the designer. He is saying, Baba, dukh alay. This is the residence of dukha. It is going to give us miseries. Ashashvatam. This place is a temporary place. We have heard this many times, but we have to hear it again and again to remind ourselves that our real shelter, our real happiness lies in the permanence, in sat, in a place where there is no misery, the shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. So she is wandering here and there, trying to enjoy. She is there. She is walking around different places, trying to enjoy differently, absorbed in her job. Similarly, in this world also, we get absorbed, trying to enjoy this world. The Bhagavatam gives a beautiful analogy. Once there was a crow. He saw a flesh floating in the river. Wow, so happy. I've got this flesh. So he just pounced on it and nibbing it, slowly relishing it. And the dead body is moving with the flow of the river. Slowly it's moving. And gradually it enters the ocean. But the crow is absorbed, completely absorbed in that. Now, wow. And it's going deep in the ocean, deep. Middle of nowhere, where finally when the crow realizes, my God, the flesh is going to get over, and he looks around, there's water all around. Nowhere he could fly back. So that is something like this. Is sometimes we are caught up in so many things in this world. Okay, let me do this, let me earn, let me do this. The time is passing. Time is going on, ticking, tick, like that. It is passing. And finally, unfortunate times, we come to a situation, dead end. We don't know what to do. Where should I go? Where should I turn to? So better is if we open our eyes. For each one of us, it's for me, it's for you, it's for each one of us. It's better if we open our eyes and seek shelter in the permanent. Otherwise, we can just keep hovering on that flesh, going on. But ultimately, we'll end up. It may apparently seem tasteful at time. Thoda samay tak lagega. It looks so nice. Wow, the crow is alone, enjoying. But the time is moving. Krishna, in the form of Kala, is very, very powerful. So that is what Putana here is. She is moving around, troubling. And then Shukadev Goswami describes how she dressed herself very, very beautifully. She had that mystic power. She could travel in the air on a branch of a tree, and she could dress herself in such beautiful form. She assumed that all the Brajabasis, they were also enamored. They were seeing, wow, looks like somebody. They were discussing among themselves, probably this is some Rambha or some Urvashi or some damsels from heaven have come, or maybe more beautiful than them. So they are also not so beautiful like her. She assumed such a beautiful form that all the Brajabasis let her go. And even some of them were thinking, probably she is goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, or maybe Mother Saraswati has come to see the newborn in the house of Nanda Maharaj. She entered by Krishna's will, by Krishna's direction. She desired to reach there. So Krishna gave her the intelligence as Paramatma. She reached right in the Nanda Bhavan, in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, with Yashoda, Mai, Rohini Devi, both are standing, but seeing the beautiful form, they are thinking probably she is the goddess of fortune with a lotus in her hand, or she is some heavenly goddess who have come to breastfeed my Krishna, and by drinking her milk, my child will get good health. That was the illusory power of Putana's form. Of course, we know for the Brajabasis, it was Krishna's yoga maya. But for us, we can see, as Krishna explained in the Bhagavad Gita, kama esha krodha esha, this kama, and the next verse, or the next, he said, avratam jnanam chaitan, that is covered, this lust is covered in a very, very beautiful way. It's packaged. It appears so attractive. As Shukadeva Goswami explained, it appears as if a sharp sword in a soft sheath. You have a cover for the sword, very velvet covered, and diamond studded and gold studded, but inside it is a sharp sword which can cut immediately. That is what the nature of this world is. So then, she is there, right inside Yashoda Mai, Rohini Devi, convinced that her milk is so good for our son. So Putana also approaches there, and Krishna closes her eyes. Of course, Acharyas have given many, many reasons why Krishna closed her eyes, around 20 reasons why Krishna closed. This is the beauty of these scriptures. The Acharyas, those who are seeing these pastimes, they can actually derive so much nectar from these leelas and pastimes. 20 reasons why Krishna closed his eyes, going into the mind of Krishna. They are in touch with God, so they can know what is Krishna's mind. That is what devotees are. So there are various reasons. Of course, some of the reasons, one of the reasons why Krishna closed, the first demon I have come to kill so many demons, the first demon I have come to kill is a lady. No, I don't want to see her. It's too bad. So Krishna didn't want to see her. Of course, another reason is Krishna didn't want to make her fearful. If Krishna would have seen into her eyes straight, she probably would have got feared and she would have not lifted Krishna. So Krishna preferred to close her eyes. And also, of course, Krishna was thinking, she has dressed like my mother. She has come to breastfeed me. And I'll have to kill her. How can I see her? And sometimes, so in that sense, Krishna didn't want to see her face. So with that, Krishna closed her eyes. But she didn't realize that she was picking a snake, thinking it to be a rope. That is what Sukadeva Goswami beautifully describes. And she immediately picked up Krishna. And then she put her nipples into the mouth of the Supreme Lord, who was in the form of a little baby, maybe a 6 days old or something, very, very soft, delicate body. Krishna, Gopal, was lying there. So she put her nipples in the mouth of Krishna, and Krishna began to suck her milk, and along with the milk, her life air. And Sukadeva Goswami very brilliantly describes this beautiful episode and how Krishna reciprocated. Of course, as we will see later on, this is Krishna's reciprocation as he speaks in the Bhagavatam, in the Bhagavad Gita also, the fourth chapter. Ye yatha mam prapadyante tam sataiva bhajamyam. As one approaches me, I reciprocate. But here we see such a beautiful reciprocation. She has come to kill Krishna. Of course, Krishna took her life here in reciprocation. But what did Krishna give her? The ultimate destination of mother in the spiritual world. That is what Srimad Bhagavatam speaks about. That is the beauty of the Supreme Lord. He accepted that small, insignificant desire that she wanted to offer milk also. Of course, her only desire was to offer that poisonous breasts. But Krishna took her that small, insignificant desire that she is dressed like my mother. She is dressed like a sadhu, dressed like my mother. That was Putana's qualification. In Vrindavan, dressed like my mother, wanted to offer poison. And what was the reward Krishna gave? This is how Krishna reciprocates. No master of this world can reciprocate in this way. Krishna is that Supreme Lord. Even if somebody does a small, insignificant thing, like somebody is going and some straw is there in somebody's hair, somebody says, oh, there is a straw in your hair. And then Krishna remembers that. A small, was an insignificant service. That Krishna just remembers that. A small, insignificant service done by a devotee or anyone to him is remembered by Krishna. If somebody does a service the size of a mustard, Krishna makes it the size of a mountain, a Mount Everest. And the material world is just the opposite. So you may serve someone for years, lifetime, but then many times you have to hear, aapne mere liye kiya hi kya? This happens in relationships. So many times you spend so much years with someone, and then aapne mujhe diya hi kya? Aapne mere liye kya? You spend lifetime, the whole lifetime serving someone, your children, your wife. Ultimately you get to hear, that is the nature of this world. Kya kiya aapne mere liye? Yeah, what have you done for me? So you served so much to help someone. But Krishna is not like that. Small, insignificant service done by anyone in this world, Krishna magnifies it like a great mountain. That is what Krishna is. When Sudama went to Dwaraka, of course he didn't want to ask for any... We all know the story. Sudama went to Krishna, sent by his wife, that go to Dwaraka. He is your Dwarakadish. He is your friend. He will definitely offer you something. He didn't want to ask, but insisted by her wife, he went. And of course, they were good friends, Krishna and Sudama. Krishna such beautifully received him, greeted him, offered him such wonderful reception and made him sit and such wonderful reception, and all the queens also came to know about this, that Sudama is here, Krishna's dear friend is here. They all wanted him to serve him and feed him. And of course, Krishna, before that, Krishna asks, so what have you brought for me? So Sudama was very, very hesitant, seeing the opulence of Dwarka, all gold, diamond, jewelry and everything. And what he had was in a unclean cloth, some chipped rice, poha, which he had begged. That also was from different houses. The acharyas explained different. It was not just one variety. There's different chip that was begged from. That means, usually when some beggar comes, we give the most poorest thing. So that was what he had. And this is what, and the Krishna lovingly accepted that, morsel after morsel, and finally Rukmini Devi had to stop. And then Krishna offered her such a wonderful reception, personally bathing his lotus feet, massaging his feet. And when all the queens heard, wow, Krishna's friend has come, our husband's friend, they wanted to serve. And so they came a proposal that he should come every day, one day to our house. And so now I was thinking, oh my God, I have to stay 16,108 days. That means so many days would pass. Of course, then no. Sudama said, no, I cannot accept the invitation. So then Krishna, of course, suggested that everyone make bhoga and bring. So Krishna was reciprocating in a most beautiful way. So all the queens, they made different bhogas with so many wonderful items. So 16,108 thalis of different bhogas came for Sudama. And Krishna told, you have to accept from everyone. So Krishna has to answer that. So he was thinking what to do. So then Sudama was like very confused, picking up from everything, small. But then finally Sudama goes. And then, of course, Sudama was happy that he could meet his old friend Krishna. He had faith in the Lord. But then he was thinking, it was there, good hospitality. He was not thinking about it, but then he thought. And then, of course, when he went back, we saw Krishna, through his yogamaya, arranged such a beautiful palace. And when Sudama reached there, he was thinking, oh my God, have I come to some other place? And then he started asking, hey, there was a house. And then, of course, they explained that Lakshmiji, and through all this, as entry, when he saw his wife, he was confused. He's the same lady. What has happened? So then, of course, one reason the acharyas explained that why did Krishna not tell Sudama, ki main aisa karne ja raha hu, I'm going to do that for you. This obvious question may come, why didn't Krishna tell? Some of the acharyas explained that Krishna was shy, that what he is doing is such insignificant. Sudama, with all his efforts, came all the way here and brought this gift for me. It was the best he could arrange. And I cannot do my best, because if Krishna wants to do his best, it's beyond anyone's comprehension, even for anyone. So Krishna was thinking, I cannot do my best for Sudama. So in that, he was feeling shy that I didn't do much, anything for Sudama. He was feeling shy. That is the nature of the Lord. He is grateful for any small thing which is done, as in contrast to this material world. Aapne kya hi kya hai mere liye. That is the nature of this material world. You can work for hours, spending for someone, and then the job says, hey, what have you done? If you don't show the results, you may be working for hours, putting your whole life, energy, and because of some reasons, no result. What have you done? Why are you wasting your time? That is the nature of this world. And Krishna herein, reciprocating with Putra in such a beautiful way, that is what Krishna's reciprocation is. And of course, sometimes to purify, some pain has to be endured. Like to teach a child a lesson, sometimes the parents, the mother and the father, they have to slap also. See here also, Putana, to teach Putana, Krishna had to teach some lesson also. So then Putana was trying to, so Krishna, along with the milk and the poison, is sucking her life here. And Putana is shouting, Muncha, Muncha, leave me, O child. And then Krishna is holding her breasts and kicking her with his divine soft legs, which were appearing to her like thunderbolts. And then she was crying, and she could not control herself in that concealed form which she had come. And she is running out of the house, running, and then finally when she is out, she assumes a huge form. Shukadeva Goswami elaborately describes the 12-mile huge form which Putana assumed. And then she went out in the outskirts, where there was a mango orchard or a garden of Kamsa, and she fell down in a huge sound. Bhagavatam describes all the three worlds were trembling by the huge sound, and she crushed all the trees in that Kamsa's garden into powder. That is Krishna's way of doing things, the most perfect. Whatever Krishna does is the most perfect. He killed Putana, gave her the position of the mother. At the same time, no Brajabasi was disturbed at all. He took her to the outskirt, and Kamsa's garden was completely destroyed. That is Krishna. So in all the Brajabasis, when they heard the noise, they were all thinking about Krishna. What happened to Krishna? Yashodam, I fainted. And then all the elderly Brajabasi ladies who were equally loving Krishna, they came running to that spot. Running where Krishna is, where Putana is, looking for Krishna. And they immediately climbed up Putana's body. Because she was a huge 12-mile form and spread all over the earth. The ghastly descriptions are given by Shukadeva Goswami. That his mouth was full of teeth, each resembling the front of a plow. Her nostrils were like mountain caves. Her breasts were resembling slabs of stone. Her scattered hair were copper color, and different descriptions are there. Such huge, grotesque form was there. But these cowherd ladies loved Krishna so much, they just didn't think about it. They just climbed up, made a chain, climbed up, brought Krishna down, brought it to Yashoda Maya. And of course, then their love for Krishna. That is beautifully explained. That how very lovingly they brought Krishna with the tail of the calf, they switched over around Krishna, and they bathed Krishna with the cow urine and applied tilak with the bathed him with the cow dung and different ways like we apply tilak. It's very important to wear tilak. Vedic culture says that's the marking of the body is this Vaishnava tilak. They actually, these Vedic symbols by seeing a person, one would recognize who the person's owner is. Like a different achar, different Vaishnava sampradayas, they have their tilaks. Everyone would have their tilaks. When you come to know, this is from this sampradaya, this is belonging to this personality. Even the ladies, they would have like a sindoor here, that she belongs to someone. Like a Vedic culture, that system was there. So in this way, they, with the cow dung, they bathed with cow urine, and they applied tilak with the cow dung to Krishna's body. And then, with different names of the Supreme Lord, the Brajabasi ladies, they were offering prayers and glorifying Supreme Lord Vishnu. And of course, the long list, they say, may Aja protect your legs, may the Lord Maniman protect your knees, may the Lord Yajna protect your thighs, may Achyuta protect your upper part of the waist, may Hayagiri protect your abdomen, may Kesha protect your heart, may Isha protect your chest, may Urukrama protect your face, Ishwar protect your head. So in this way, different names of Lord Vishnu they are uttering to just give protection to Krishna, who is the source of all the Vishnu. But that is Vatsalya, that is what the love of the Brajabasis ladies is. Of course, Prabhupada, very brilliant purports in these verses. We don't have much time because we have to end the class soon. But in one of the beautiful purports, Srila Prabhupada writes that now this is how the simple cowherd ladies, even they were knowing how to give real protection by the cow urine, by the cow dung, and by chanting the names of Lord Vishnu, different names of Lord Vishnu. Of course, Prabhupada comments, if one remembers Vishnu always, even though one is disturbed by many bad elements, one can be protected without a doubt. And of course, also Prabhupada explains, if someone does not remember all these names, one can simply chant Lord Vishnu, Lord Vishnu, Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna, as they were chanting different names. And then Prabhupada says, even the Ayurveda Shastra, Prabhupada quotes in the purport, recommends Aushadhi Chintayet Vishnu. That means, even while taking medicine, one should remember Vishnu. This is Ayurveda saying that even while taking medicine, one should remember Vishnu, because the medicine is not all and all, and Lord Vishnu is the real protector. So we should remember practical tips also. While taking medicine, remember Krishna, Lord Vishnu. That is the recommendation of Ayurveda Shastra also. So in this way, they performed various rituals, the Nyasa, the different names of Lord Vishnu were chanted. And just to conclude, we will see the destination. Nanda Maharaj is on his way back. They see this huge form of Putana lying on the outskirts in the garden there. And they were confused. It's a huge mountain, or what is that? Or did we come in some wrong direction? Or did we miss the path and we came somewhere else in a hurry? Or what is this? And finally, when they come in and they realize, oh my God, this is demon. So they immediately go see Krishna. Krishna is fine and everyone is there. Shodama is with Krishna, feeding him her breast milk. So then Nanda Maharaj and all the cowherd men, they decide now what to do with this huge body. It's difficult to bury. It's such a huge 12-mile form. Who will dig such a hole to bury her? And of course then they decide, okay, let's all collect thousands of axes, chop her body into pieces and burn it. So they're thinking, my God, that's also quite a task. But they had to do it, chop her body into pieces and burn it. But they were fearing that because Putana, she was drinking the blood and eating the flesh. So when you burn a body, any dead body, it smells so foul. Anyone who has seen it, such a foul smell comes when you burn any dead body. So they were worried and concerned what to do. But then they had to burn her. And they made all the arrangements, collected the logs of woods, and started to burn these different pieces. And when they burned and they came aside, they could smell such divine fragrance of Aguru emanating from somewhere. So all the Brajavasis initially were confused. Hey, where is this smell coming from? They were all discussing among themselves. Maybe in the Patala, our Bali Maharaj is probably doing some yajna and that fragrance is coming. Or maybe Indra is burning his stalks of Aguru. And because of that, some fragrance is coming. So they were all like confused. But of course, when they realized this is from the body of Putana, it's unimaginable. Such a horrible or whatever, inauspicious body. But just by the touch of Krishna, that body also became. She achieved the position of mother in the spiritual world. Even her body in this material world also gave so much happiness and fragrance to the Brajabasis. That is Krishna's divine touch, which can bring fragrance in our lives, the divine fragrance, which can make our life sublime, happy, blissful. That is what Krishna's touch is all about. His lips touched Putana's breast, and we saw such a divine transformation, such fragrance emanating from her poisonous body. So that is what Krishna's touch can bring about in each one of our lives, which in this material world being present is inauspicious. So that is what the message of the Bhagavad Gita, the words which are emanating from Krishna's lotus lips, they are like Krishna's personal touch to each one of us. So if we take to these words, we accept these words, that the river of nectar is flowing, we just have to go in and take a palmful and drink it. So these message of Bhagavad Gita is being spread all over this Bhagavad Gita, especially in this month of marathon, the month of the appearance of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Devotees go all out and distribute to different streets, to different colleges, to different universities, to different stations, different stalls. All the devotees all over the world, by Srila Prabhupada's grace, this Ganges or this transcendental touch of the lips, the transcendental song of God, the Bhagavad Gita, the book of compassion and love of the Supreme Lord, is being distributed throughout the world, in all the streets, in the villages. The devotees have gone to different villages in Punjab, in all over the country, in all over the world. Actually, devotees are distributing these books from South Africa to South America to North America to the Siberia. Even devotees there in the Russia, in the cold devotees are going out and giving this. That is Srila Prabhupada's great blessing upon this humanity, that this message, which is so profound and such wonderful, which can make our lives fragrant, like those aguru smell emanating from Putana, is being made available to each one of us by Srila Prabhupada's grace. So on this most auspicious occasion of the appearance of Srimad Bhagavad Gita, we can pray to the Supreme Lord, to this message, that we can actually in true sense accept this message, take shelter of this Vedic literature, this Bhagavad Gita, and help others to get this message. Thank you all very much for your wonderful and patient hearing. So with this we would like to end, because we have another evening program, the Gita Gyana Yajna. So anyone would like to know about those further details can contact Gokulananda Prabhu. So he'll give further details on the Gita Gyana Yajna, which is going to be held this evening. So I'd like to thank all of you very much. Jai Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki! Srila Prabhupada Ki! Jai.